This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisin and Wang Xiaoning. It is 7:36 in the morning. In the meantime, though, Israel has been certainly in the news because Israel conducted dozens of airstrikes on the Gaza Strip yesterday after Palestinian forces fired rockets at southern Israeli cities. So the pre-dawn raids on Gaza were some of the heaviest seen since the fighting began a week ago. Israel said it hit facilities belonging to the militant group Hamas and several commanders' homes, but main roads and power lines were also damaged. Meanwhile, international calls for a ceasefire continue to mount. The UN Security Council held an emergency meeting on Sunday, and its Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that further fighting had the potential to unleash an uncontainable security and humanitarian crisis.
He pleaded for an immediate end to the utterly appalling violence, but there was no signs of that happening, and the overall death toll in Gaza now stands at 197, including 58 children, with 1,230 injured, according to the Hamas-run health ministry.
So for an analysis of the crisis, we have with us this morning Dr. Liana Kayali, lecturer for the Center for Arab and Islamic Studies at the Australian National University. Dr. Liana, thank you for joining us today. So the crisis has been ongoing for decades now. What sparked this latest escalation, and what's different this time around?
Thank you very much for having me. Well, a confluence of factors have sparked this latest flare-up. We can more or less put the initial cause as being the forced displacement of Palestinian families from their homes in the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. And this is not an anomaly. It's actually part of a decades-old pattern and policy of displacing Palestinians from the Palestinian territories and replacing them with Israeli settlers. So in response, Palestinians protested these forced evictions, and they were brutally cracked down on by Israeli police. And now the other factor to keep in mind is the timing of these events. So first, this all took place during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, when worshippers were converging on Jerusalem and the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound to pray and to protest against the forced evictions. And it also coincided with Jerusalem Day, which is an Israeli holiday, which was set to be marked by a march by ultra-nationalist Jewish Israelis, which was meant to pass through Palestinian neighborhoods. And then yet another factor in this mix is Israeli domestic politics. So the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has been trying to hold on to power, and he's been doing this by playing on his reputation as so-called Mr. Security, and in cracking down on Palestinian militants. And so Palestinians are paying with their lives to serve Netanyahu's domestic political interests, and Israeli lives are also being put at risk for the same reason. So all of these factors converge to pave the way for an escalation. Then when Israel stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque using stun grenades, tear gas, and rubber-coated steel bullets, Hamas issued Israel with an ultimatum for Israeli forces to withdraw from the compound. And when that didn't happen, Hamas began firing rockets into Israel, which it said was being done in defense of Jerusalem.
Dr. Lina,
Israel then responded with a bombardment of Gaza.
Right, apologies for the interruption there. But you noted earlier a bit of politics on the Israeli front there. And in fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu is in the middle of coalition negotiations after an election in March, the fourth in 2 years, that ended without a clear winner. And that he's basically, do you expect with this insecurity, possible insecurity in his role, could you see this ongoing escalation right now continue in this manner?
Absolutely. Netanyahu has indicated that at this point he doesn't intend to stop the bombing. As I said, it does serve his purposes. The Israeli public seems to be in support of these attacks. His opponents in the Israeli Knesset were poised to form a government just when these attacks began, and then a pause was put on those plans. So it's possible that now we might see that Israel could go to another election, or perhaps Netanyahu might be in a position to once again negotiate his way into power.
Now, Dr. Liana, many countries around the world don't actually recognize Israel's annexation of East Jerusalem and the Golan Heights. So why then is Israel still able to act with impunity and enjoy support from key superpowers like the US?
You're quite right in saying that most of the world does not recognize Israel's annexation of East Jerusalem and the Golan Heights. In fact, international law is unambiguous about the fact that East Jerusalem is occupied Palestinian territory to which Israel has no legitimate claims. The problem is that this has not been backed up by any kind of substantive punitive action. In fact, quite the opposite. So the U.S. under President Trump, former President Trump, recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and moved its embassy from Tel Aviv to West Jerusalem, a move which, by the way, the current President Biden did not reverse. And moreover, the U.S. is funding Israel to the tune of $3.8 billion annually in military aid. And as a result, Israel has complete license to use its full power to kill and maim Palestinians and destroy houses and buildings.
So, you know, with that in mind, what role, if any, can external parties like the UN or the surrounding Middle East countries or even the US play in this ongoing crisis?
Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, in recent days, we saw that the UN Security Council has attempted to intervene. They convened three emergency meetings in which they tried to issue a joint statement condemning Israel's military response and calling for a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel. And each time they were blocked from doing so by the U.S. This morning, there have been reports coming in, I believe, of Joe Biden having called Prime Minister Netanyahu and expressed his support for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. But we'll see if anything comes of that. And other countries have also expressed their support for a ceasefire. So we'll see how that plays out. But at this point, neighboring countries in the Middle East and around the world have been condemning Israel's attack, but haven't taken much action.
What reason would the U.S. have to intervene in UN action, considering that Joe Biden himself has reportedly expressed his support for a ceasefire?
That's a good question. It may be that the UN Security Council resolution was not only calling for a ceasefire, but was also simultaneously condemning Israeli actions. And up until now, President Biden has been reiterating his support for Israel's right to, quote, defend itself.
Now, countries in support of Palestine have called for sanctions and increased foreign pressure, but does it really move the needle in this equation here?
Thus far, not so much. The UN General Assembly and the EU regularly issue declarations on Israeli violations of international law that don't result in any substantive action. So we've actually seen quite the opposite taking place. Israel has been seeing rewards come from its actions. So last year, we saw a number of Arab countries, you know, the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco, establish normalization deals with Israel, despite their stated support for the Palestinians. Now, for its part, the EU, which is Israel's biggest trading partner, has in the past said it will use diplomatic means to discourage Israel from carrying out various plans like annexation. And it's true that some member states have been calling for this. But there appears to be, again, little support for such a move at the moment. So the focus really needs to be concentrated on where pressure would make a difference.
So moving forward, Dr. Liana, do you actually see any possible resolutions for this conflict?
Well, in the immediate term, it's difficult to say. As I said, Netanyahu has indicated that he intends to continue Israel's bombing of Gaza. So in an address on Sunday, he said that Israeli air raids would be continuing at full force and would take time. So unless the international community steps in a meaningful way and negotiates a ceasefire, the war is likely to continue and the death toll is likely to continue to climb until Netanyahu's political interests are satisfied.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Dr. Liana. That was Dr. Liana Kayali, lecturer for the Centre for Arab and Islamic Studies at the Australian National University, helping us understand what has been happening between Israel and Palestine right now, which is, of course, a developing story. And we're going to be bringing you updates on this as we get them ourselves. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.